honoring Bonhoeffer's text is just an act of love. And taking seriously anybody who I sit across from and look in their eyes is an act of love. I mean, it's the pastoral act of listening and attention. That's what I felt like I gave Bonhoeffer for those 3 years. Not to mention the enormous amount of people who I did that with and did so in order to be as thoughtful and helpful and relevant to the needs of the people in Durham and in church world. Yeah, I mean, this is the fundamental act of being taught how to attend to another human being is the PhD's goal, as far as I'm concerned.
Welcome to another episode of the Pastor Theologian Show. Today we have our own Jameson Ross, who is the CPT Director of Student and Local Theologian Fellowships, joining us on the podcast. We're going to get to know Jameson a little bit this episode and introduce him to you all in the CPT network. Really excited for you to hear this conversation with our newest hire here at the CPT.
We are delighted to speak today with Jameson Ross, who is the director of our Student and Local Theologian Fellowships Initiative, new initiative for the CPT, where we are really trying to create more on-ramps into the life and ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians in our work and help people around the country catch the vision for the pastor theologian. And I've known Jameson for a number of years through mutual friends, and we've been able to connect over the years. And he was a pastor in the Chicagoland area for a good number of years, and has just recently finished up a PhD at the University of Durham. And as he was in his final phase of that, reached out to me about possibilities for work and partnering with the Center for Pastor Theologians. And in God's good providence, we were in a position to bring on somebody to do exactly what he's doing now. And so it all came to fruition, and we are delighted to have him on the staff team. Jameson, great to have you today with us, and we're really looking forward to talking with you about your story of faith and educational background and approach to ministry. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So I don't know where we should jump in. Maybe just help us understand a little bit about your background, where you're born and reared, and faith story.
Yeah.
And just kind of dive in.
Yeah. So born in the Chicago area, parents, both Christians. My dad was a pastor in the Assemblies of God for a time, and left pastoral ministry, but was really active still in the church that he was attending when he was on staff, and raised us in that context. Probably, though I don't really recall, came to faith young just because I was in a context of a Christian home. So what was I going to do otherwise?
Yeah, no choice.
Yeah. And probably through high school, kind of coming to the realization that following Jesus meant something slightly different than just a kind of general acknowledgement. And so youth pastor, really influential in my development through middle school into high school. When I was 15, saw that I was sort of on a kind of fence about whether I was going to be like significantly devoted to following Jesus or if I was just going to kind of put it in a sort of backseat position. So he was watching the development of a relationship with a girl in particular who he thought like, this is maybe not going to go super well. And this looks like you're poised to sort of follow a different kind of path. And so he actually intentionally.
How tried and true is that like youth pastor narrative, by the way?
Well,
like,
having been one is very tried and true.
Yeah, it's like, not like, a wisdom relationship is yes, going to compromise go well. Someone's eternal destiny.
Exactly. So he actually like legitimately, we're in Tennessee on this camp getaway thing and took me onto a mountaintop and sort of like pressed hard on
wow.
this.
Wow.
And said, like,
it was transfigured before your very eyes.
Right. He said, you either pick you or Jesus. It was that stark.
Wow.
A dichotomy.
And how old are you exactly?
15.
15. Okay.
Yeah.
Sophomore year.
Yep. Sophomore year. And I took that challenge relatively seriously and still dated the girl, but decided to, you know, sort of in a more holistic or significant way follow Christ. And that was the case through the rest of my time in high school. And at that point, I think there was a development in high school that was pretty interesting. In a British literature class, it was the first time that I really took anything seriously in terms of reading text or caring about reading at all or doing any kind of schoolwork. So we were reading Beowulf.
Yeah.
And my teacher asked a question about some interpretive sort of question about this text. And it was like I could see nothing but the answer to this question as it sort of jumped off the page and sort of making sense of this text. And it was as if this sort of development, this moment was really significant for me in recognizing that I could do the same thing with the biblical text. Wow. And so the rest of my high school time was spent, you know, trying to take seriously reading the Bible, which then led to wanting to do more theological education.
Marvelous. Yeah. Marvelous. So tell us about, you know, college, further education, ministry. Get us into that phase of your life. It's great to get a little bit of background, but how did things unfold for you, Jameson?
Yeah. So I the story of all of my education has been one of rejection and then pushing through.
You being rejected.
Yes,
not
me
you
being
rejecting
rejected.
Education.
No.
I knew
me
that about
being
the
rejected.
Later phases. I didn't realize this is a
So when
a
I was graduating
this is part of
from
your
high
charm,
school.
Jameson,
exactly. I just the perseverance, the endurance. I was graduating from high school, looking to see what was next. And I had developed some relationships with some folks at a camp up in northern Wisconsin. And they had a program, sort of a one-year Bible sort of program where you're doing intensive ministry on camp staff and you're also doing some Bible stuff. And that was an intriguing sort of thing as a kind of gap year kind of thing. But what I was really hoping was to be at, because I grew up in Chicago, to be at Wheaton or to be at Moody. And so I applied to Moody and got rejected in my first round.
This is back when their acceptance rates were like real, real low, is my guess.
I'm not sure. Yeah. It was real low
I just
for
know
me.
It, I know that 0%
rate was 0%.
But I just know there have been times where it's been terrifically difficult to get accepted. Okay.
Yeah, that could, well, I hope that was the case.
Yes.
There were really quality people.
We're just going to assume that was the case.
Yes, certainly.
I went to
They agonized over whether or not.
And they just couldn't.
They couldn't do this.
Not
enough spaces.
I went to a college fair in the hopes of getting an application to go to Wheaton and wrote down my ACT score. And the person running the college fair table said that they didn't want to expend the cost of sending me an application because I wouldn't get in on my ACT score, which was crushing to me. My ACT score wasn't great, but there's so much more to a human being than one's ACT score, even though I understand it, you know, it matters.
But this person literally looking at you is like, based on
as
this metric.
As a 17 or 18-year-old, bushy-tailed,
you're
I'm
not
excited.
Worth the $250 in postage costs.
Exactly right. I was crushed. So though it was the fallback sort of option, I went to this one-year thing up at this camp. And had an absolutely incredible year. And having this, you know, this sort of thing develop in me to want to read, this gave me all the space I needed to be able to really spend a lot of time reading. And that then sort of set me up to do Moody. So I did apply to Moody the next year, got in and did my degree, a BA in Biblical Languages at Moody. And really loved it. Halfway through the time there is when I got invited to do an internship at a church in the far western suburbs of Chicago. And so the last 2 years of my time at Moody was spent doing ministry, basically full time, taking the train and then walking to a car that was parked for me and getting in the car and driving 20 minutes to the church and serving and then doing that all reverse to get home and work on my projects.
Yeah, you're doing like an hour plus commute.
Yeah. To be able to do ministry.
It's like a 2 hour commute.
It was a really long time. And in my senior year, I was able to get a car and drive all that, but multiple times a week. And at the end of that, this is really significant. At the end of my time at Moody, I'm about to graduate. And over the course of the year previously, some stuff had been happening I was serving the student ministry as an intern. And the guy who was the student ministries director, along with a couple other folks on the team, sort of got interested in a bunch of theological stuff that ended up producing all sorts of really significant problems. I was a part of the team and we were all sort of having these conversations and stuff, reading these different books together and engaging in.
So what is this, like process theology? What's going on here?
No, this is like kingdom theology kind of stuff, serving the poor kind of stuff.
Yeah. Nothing less biblical.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. But like pushing a really hard sort of line on acceptance with Jesus is dependent on, you know, you wealthy kids in the far western wealthy suburbs, you know, being able to put
right.
the poor first and this kind of stuff. And it became really, really dicey. That there ended up that there were different sort of expressions of like white papers on the part of the elders of the church.
Yeah.
And then this contingent of student ministry staff, which led eventually to the, you know, letting go of a number of people on the team. And I was one of the few sort of left behind. So I was in my senior year.
You just kind of kept your head down. Yeah. And this time?
I was engaged in most of the conversations, and finding it really, really complicated. In fact, what I ended up doing was I took a bunch of independent studies at Moody my senior year in order to work through all of the material that these guys were using so that I could be as engaged as I could be and arguing sort of the opposite side, which was really tricky while on staff. So anyway, they got removed and it fell to me. So I'm finishing my my degree at Moody, just about to get married, and I'm this, you know, one of the very few left to lead this student ministry.
And you're like 23, 24
years
old?
Yeah, 23.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, suddenly the high school pastor at this large church. And
and by the way, getting a kind of crash course in church politics.
That's right.
And a bit of the underbelly of how these things can go down.
Exactly. On a complicated, in a complicated staff and a complicated system with a lot of people, you know,
with like a full blown theological controversy.
Yeah, that's right.
On a church staff.
And it was a really emotionally draining and difficult time, and, you know, relationally really hard.
And do you like that kind of stuff? Do you like sort of theological controversy? What's your temperament like on these sorts of things?
No.
So this was a drain. This was a significant drain.
It was. It also provided a significant impetus to do my like final years of my time at Moody, which was really good, I think.
Yeah. Is it the ideas are draining to you, or just interpersonal strife?
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah, the difficulty relationally and the implications, the consequences for all the folks, you know, shepherding a group of 100, you know, two plus 100 students after the fact, staff, volunteer staff who are all really concerned and confused and trying to pick up all the pieces.
And what did that do to your sense of calling? Were you at that point, you're like, yeah, I want to do this for the rest of my life? That is to say, pastoral ministry? Or
I don't know.
Were you thinking, you know, maybe not?
No, that wasn't a turnoff. It was more, I didn't know if I wanted to do that, period. Mm-hmm. I think that sort of middle to late high school phase was like, I'm really interested in engaging in biblical texts. I'm really interested in doing ministry stuff. I like Christian kind of ministry.
Yeah.
I think in the early Moody period was more like, yeah, pastoral ministry is where that needs to be done. The desire to do the internship was like, I'm doing all this academic stuff. I should be balancing some of that out with some practical ministry output to learn what that's like. And I think coming to the end of my time at Moody, particularly through that really complicated and difficult time, it felt like if I would have had the choice, if I had the money and the time, I would have gone immediately into a graduate program or something. And pursued probably academic interests rather than spend my time, you know, thinking about ministry. But at that point, the students that I cared about, who I'd been serving for a couple of years, were all devastated and confused.
Yes.
And so, you know, to be asked to kind of commit to a 5+ year stint to bring health to that.
And they asked you to commit up front.
Yeah.
You're going to be around.
Yeah, to 5 years. Which at that point I think would have been one of the longest standing youth pastors in that church's
maybe
history.
In the country.
And was, you know? So it's very possible.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, what's the average tenure for a youth pastor? It's something like
2.5.
Yeah, it's like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
So, and that was born out of them asking you to stick around for 5 years was born out of the circumstances. That wasn't like a church policy that.
No, that wasn't. Yeah, that was the circumstances and just the track record of youth ministry.
How it had gone.
And how that had gone.
In recent history.
Yeah, even that church.
Wow.
Not having a lot of people stick around for super long. And
But you stayed at the church.
I did,
I mean, you
I
ministered
did that,
there. I mean, kind of to move
then,
your story along.
And then kept going.
For another 10+ years.
Yeah, that's right. And I was one of the student ministries pastors for 11 of those 12 that I was there. And found it really fruitful and really good. And that was a joy. And in the meantime, all of that, like I'm just waiting, sort of biding my time, wanting to fulfill my commitments and enjoying the opportunities that I was having. Because at a certain point, I started to take on preaching responsibilities on the weekend, became a teaching pastor, and really enjoyed all that, but really wanted to pursue more theological education.
So you're doing very well in ministry. I mean, that's fair to say. I mean, things were going well.
Yeah.
You were enjoying it. your gifts were being affirmed, but still had this passion for theology, deeper study, and all the rest of it. And,
yep.
And then you went to Wheaton Graduate School.
I did, yeah. The church was
this
really...
This isn't another story of rejection, though, is it?
No.
Oh, good. See, there we go.
That's actually
right?
True.
Okay.
That was. I think that's
Come
the
on.
Only one. That's the
one
only
stage.
Degree I've ever just gotten accepted to.
Wheaton is very good.
That's right. Why I came back
Much
around
Much nicer
to them,
than the people
I'm
at Moody.
I'm not entirely sure. They wouldn't send me an application when I was 17, Todd.
That was Moody?
That was Wheaton.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you weren't listening.
Well, I heard you talk about a school. I didn't hear that it was Wheaton.
Yeah, it was Wheaton.
I must have selectively blocked that.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
you were offended inside.
The church
was happy to help me because I was a teaching pastor, student ministries pastor there for a while. They wanted to help me to get a degree, and this is one of these major points of tension in the kind of vocation that I had of my academic interests, intellectual interests, and having done a biblical language degree at Moody was that I cared about doing Greek and Hebrew exegesis. And the church was very willing to sort of help me get a degree, but they wanted me to get an English language degree because Wheaton was developing a cohort system where you could be much more flexible as a person in ministry getting a degree. And the church was very happy to help financially and free me up time-wise to do some of that. And I initially said yes to that degree and was planning to go ahead and apply for it. And then within just a couple of weeks, I just never settled because it was a terminal degree. I wasn't going to be able to pursue anything beyond it. And that felt really, really disappointing to me. So I went back to them and said, I really appreciate your willingness to help me, but I really want to do this other one, which means we've got to reorg sort of my whole job description in order to free me up to be a traditional student, to go day in and day out and to drive, make the drive time and all of the work that I'm going to have to do, you know.
Wow.
And eventually, with some work, they were willing to do that. And so we went ahead with that. So I did the biblical exegesis degree at Wheaton initially 2 years was part-time in the program while I was full-time at the church. And then I just was it's so hard to keep those worlds going, the sort of expectations and pressure and whatever of the ministry context. And then all of the work that I was loving, you know, I was coming home from these courses and working on these papers and just eating it all up.
Yeah.
And this sort of tension internally eventually led me to say, I just have to do this full time. So in the final year, I went to the exegesis degree full time to finish and stopped working at the church so I could finish that degree.
And then decided to pursue a PhD at some point. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
That was,
I know a lot of our listeners are in graduate school and thinking about the possibility of PhDs.
And I imagine many are in the situation that you were describing previously, where you're pastoring at a church and you're thinking about doing another degree. I think a lot of this would resonate with a lot of people, different stages.
Yeah, and having to wrestle through that question of like, what's the long-term aim of it?
Yep.
How does it fit in the pastoral sort of space?
How did you work through all that?
I did by sort of sticking to my convictions and, you know, saying, I'm not going to do the one, I'll do the other one, and them being really gracious about that. They weren't excited, I don't think, about some of my interests. They weren't excited about, you know, what that might mean, the academic sort of interests that I had, which was really frustrating. There wasn't a lot of support at a big picture level to say, we care about these things like you care about these things and we want to help you do that. It was a broader sort of like, there's a master's degree that will help you do your teaching pastor thing better or leadership and whatever. And so coming to the end of that and just feeling really like I want to continue on. I had it in my head way earlier that a PhD was probably on the horizon, but then the questions of how on earth are we going to pay for that? Where's it going to be? What would it be in, et cetera, started to kind of flood. So at the end of the exegesis degree, we decided to continue on with another master's in theology, mainly because I was looking at Wheaton as a place to do a PhD and knew I wasn't going to be super competitive with one master's. So I wanted to start into the second one and start feeling out whether there was anyone at Wheaton that I could work with. So I ended up having a conversation with somebody there, the first round, had a really like a exciting conversation, accepted my proposal kind of in theory. Informally.
Yeah.
And in the end, when it was fleshed out in greater detail, really didn't like the direction that I had gone.
Oh dear.
And so it didn't pan out. And then I started to sort of put feelers out at Oxford, other places in the UK and didn't really get very far. I, in fact, got a formal rejection from Oxford, and then the following year did another set of applications and got formal rejections from Wheaton and from Trinity. And so, yeah, all that was, you know, that was just really disheartening. In both the Wheaton and the Trinity case, I had really, really good relationships with the folks that I was hoping to work with. And they were really affirming of the project, and it just didn't pan out. Yeah. And so my wife and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out if this is in you as deeply as it seems to be, and you're as interested as you are, and you've given up your job to pursue all this, and you're, you know, having to figure out how to make this all work financially.
What does this mean?
Yeah, what does this mean? And the whole time thinking, this is all to benefit. The reason I want to pursue any of this is because I have this sense that whatever I'm going to do in the future, it needs to have this element, this academic, intellectual element in it. And that being for the sake of pastoral ministry, to be engaged in local church life.
And James, I'm going to ask, at this point, were you using the language of pastor theologian, or were you acquainted with what we were doing at that time?
Yeah.
And how was that influencing and shaping the way you were thinking about things?
Yeah. So I, you know, pretty early, I think in probably not long after the Center for Pastor Theologians started, you know, as the Society for the Advancement of Ecclesial Theology, I was aware of the stuff that Gerald was writing in particular journal articles and stuff, because I was acquainted with a CPT fellow who was sort of filling me in on bits and pieces about how this thing was developing. And it was a really exciting sort of option amongst the pastoral vocational sort of options on the table. And so, yeah, I was very interested, tracking with more rejections, emailed Gerald several times to ask about being involved in fellowships over the course of the years, and in each instance got negative responses for
Gerald,
various
reasons. Gerald, if you're listening to this podcast, we're sorry.
It was just rejection after rejection after rejection all along.
And he's like, well, have you tried applying for a PhD program? And you're like, yes.
Yes,
yes,
I keep on doing that, and I can't get anywhere. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the pastor theologian language and conceptuality and some of the resourcing and stuff, I was very aware of it and finding it a compelling
and it was helpful.
Way. Very much, yeah.
I'm not trying to, of course, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm trying to get free advertisement for the podcast.
It was helpful.
We talk a lot about trying to provide a third way for people that are in the position you're describing that you're in.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear you talk about, it actually was helpful.
Yeah, because in those, even in those conversations, you know, as a pastor wanting to do education or whatever, the options were relatively straightforward. People would hear me preach and say, you probably just need to go become a professor. Mm. Or they would hear me, you know, and say like, oh, they would engage with me and say, well, you're really pastoral and you need to just stay here and do this kind of on the ground sort of pastoral ministry stuff. Don't get sucked into the abstract sort of
It'll kill your soul.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And a great point that often at the church level, this is framed up as an either or, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's exactly
well-intended congregants through no fault of their own, but they frame this up because kind of the structure of church culture and life and academic seminary cultures kind of frames it up as either or as well.
Yeah.
So tell us about
your successful application.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So the way that all came through, it's really interesting. I had, I'd really wanted to do this project that I pitched to the person at Wheaton that it didn't pan out. Pitched it to the person at Oxford, didn't pan out. Started into the theology degree, started getting really interested in the theological discipline as distinct from biblical studies, which I'd done almost exclusively to that point, and got really interested in this idea about Bonhoeffer. And I had already sent a kind of feeler email out to Francis Watson at Durham University about doing the project that I'd already pitched to these other people, a biblical studies project. He got back to me, said, yeah, I think I could supervise that. That looks good. Turn it into a proposal and we'll see what happens. This is at the same time that I'm jumping into my second master's at Wheaton and doing theology. And I'm in these courses really loving what I'm doing, thinking about Bonhoeffer because I was reading something that he wrote.
Was this for Scripture and Theology
Scripture and Theology. Yeah.
This is when you were starting to think about those things.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Putting these different pieces together. Having lots of conversations with some of the
theologians. And who was teaching that when you took it?
Mark Cortez
was teaching.
Yeah. Okay. And so he and I were having lots of conversations, and he thought that this idea that I was developing about Barton Bonhoeffer was an interesting one. So I started to put together a proposal. He started helping me with it. It looked like I was going to be able to work with him at Wheaton. I also then pitched that one to Kevin Van Hooser at TED's. And those are the ones that didn't pan out. But what ended up happening is the proposal that was developed out of those conversations became the proposal that I ended up pitching to Francis, because I got so much more interested in this Bart Bonhoeffer conversation than I was about the previous Galatians project that I had.
Nothing against Galatians. We love Galatians.
No,
you like Galatians.
I really wanted to do this.
Real quick. We want to stay on this path, but now I'm kind of want to geek out just for 30 seconds to 60 seconds here real quick on what was it that was intriguing to you about theology as a discipline as opposed to biblical studies? Share that with us for a second.
I think that the theological task, at least at that stage of things, just felt really big.
Mm.
And having done exegesis and loved exegesis, it just, and really, really enjoying the process of language and engaging with these languages, it sort of gave me the space to put the biblical text in a context. And like I'd done that with, you know, ancient Near Eastern stuff and Greco-Roman stuff, those kinds of contexts. But to put it in this broader, much broader context about tradition or about history and about ways of thinking about systematic theology or historical theology just helped me to frame up the task and situate it in such a way that now engaging with the Bible wasn't just about a personal devotional Bible reading or about preaching, but became a much different sort of engagement.
Or about historical criticism.
Right, yeah. To put it together into a broader sort of conceptuality.
Can I ask one follow-on from that real quick? Because we do want to get back to Francis Watson in Durham. What? How has that shaped the way you think about theological education and in particular pastoral formation or theological education for pastoral formation in light of, you know, the place of biblical studies in that enterprise as opposed to theological studies, the integration of the two? Obviously, this is a huge question.
Yeah,
we should come back in another
podcast episode. Yeah, I think in another episode we'll come
back. Can you give us a 30-second teaser version?
I think that the theological stuff is of massive significance. The theological vision, whatever Christian vision one operates with, is the thing that situates one's biblical exegesis or preaching or whatever else. So the ability to give people, you know, in sort of a Calvin, read the Institutes before you read the Bible kind of way, like the framework, the ability to kind of piece it together in a big picture kind of way, rather than starting with biblical texts, to actually start with, you know, something akin to the rule of faith or something like that. To be able to engage,
which is backwards to a lot of evangelical sensibilities.
Yeah,
like presumably you start with the biblical text and your theological framework, at least in theory, should be born out of that.
Yeah,
it kind of flips it on its head.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll come back to that. Let's, for the record, we're going to come back to this very good conversation with Jameson on theological education and pastoral formation. Talk to us about when you get that delicious letter in the mail from the University of Durham.
So good.
Get us into that moment, and then you pack up all your earthly possessions and your family. You move over to Durham, and how does that go?
Yeah, the acceptance letter was absolutely wonderful. I was so thrilled. But Francis had more or less said in an email, "This is going to happen," you know. But getting the actual formal invitation to come was
on the letterhead is kind of cool. The whole deal.
And for my wife and I, we just didn't have the funding. We weren't going to take out loans, and so a huge component part of us doing a PhD was funding. And which it is for everybody, but finding funding instead of borrowing funding.
So you're one of these unusual characters, at least in my experience, who didn't borrow any money, as you're just saying.
Yep.
And literally raised all of your support.
Yeah.
For a 3-year. You know, overseas PhD with a family.
Yeah, with two kids. My wife and I set a goal of $100,000. And if we could get that in about 3 months' time, then we would go. And we did. And so we packed up all of our stuff, sold everything and packed our stuff and moved to Durham. And then from there, funded the next 2 years, each of them at about $90,000 to $95,000 a piece or something like that. So in the end, just shy of $300,000 that we were able to raise to do the whole degree.
Amazing.
Which was, I mean, it's unbelievable.
The provision there is.
People, yeah, who were just really, really.
And so for prospective PhD students out there that are aspiring to get PhDs and are thinking, I've got a Mount Everest of financial commitment that I could never meet. I mean, there are creative ways to do this that there may well be people in your network that have resources and would love to support you in that way, just as you found out. I mean, you wouldn't have known that until you started asking and reaching out, and then
just
lo and behold, there it is.
For their money. I know you have money. Can I have some of it?
Yes. They're glad to partner with you.
Yeah, that's right.
Get us into Durham and working with Francis Watson.
Yeah,
share
that was
with
just
us
the best.
A, that experience, like just working with him, and then B, what you wrote on, what you learned from that.
Yeah. The experience at Durham was unbelievable. We loved living in Durham. We loved the actual educational opportunities that were afforded. Francis was amazing, super generous with his time. We had
and a world class scholar,
just
biblical
incredible.
And theological.
That's right. Yeah,
and yeah,
he knows.
Great mix
he just has access to sort of everything.
Yes,
it's unbelievable. But he was the key thing with Francis was his generosity of time.
Mm.
We had 55 supervision meetings over 2.5 years, and those were 2 hours or more each.
Wow.
And the vast majority
of that time. I did not do
that
many supervision meetings, by the way. I mean, I had a marvelous supervisor, but that's worth it. For people who don't have a framework for this sort of thing, that's a lot of meetings.
It maybe be 12 to 15 over the course of an entire PhD for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that was an enormous gift. And it was all careful reading of Bonhoeffer's German texts. That's all we did was line by line through key texts that I'd selected as my... as the stuff I wanted to focus on. And we just read them in German and discussed them in detail. And
well, that's not bad.
It was the greatest experience educationally I've ever had to just sit and read text with him. I chose to focus on Dietrich Bonhoeffer's theological exegesis and in particular attempting to coordinate his doctrine of scripture and his way of thinking about revelation with the actual practice of doing biblical work. So what does he do as he moves from biblical texts to his own comments, whether in a lecture hall like he did as a systematic theologian in Berlin, or as a preacher, or as a theological educator at Finkenwalde? So I took his 19-year-old academic piece written in Berlin.
Unreal.
Which is immature in a lot of ways, not only just in terms of the conceptualities. But
impressive for a 19-year-old.
It's extremely impressive for a 19-year-old. But he does, there are some moments where you can really see that he's young. And
what were
very
we writing at 19?
Nothing, basically. It's an unbelievable piece. I was taking that and using that as basically the sort of the hermeneutical house that he sort of frames up and then indwells through the 1930s all the way through the church struggle and into the last period of that I covered, which was his discipleship period, coordinating all these different hermeneutical sort of principles with the actual text. What's he doing when he moves from text to comment?
Oh, that's marvelous. There's so much there to come back and talk about pastoral formation and the example of Dietrich Bonhoeffer and a friend of yours and a CPT fellow, Joel Lawrence, was on the podcast not too long ago discussing Bonhoeffer. But there's just so much there, not only in terms of his theological approach, but also his life and ministry. excuse me, but the 3 years of intensive study reading German texts was helpful for pastoral ministry. Can I just ask that basic, simple, maybe too simplistic of a question? Maybe some of our listeners are thinking, that doesn't sound relevant to pastoral ministry at all.
That's right. Well, here's the baseline sort of way I think about it. Honoring Bonhoeffer's text is just an act of love.
Mm.
And taking seriously anybody who I sit across from and look in their eyes is an act of love. I mean, it's the pastoral act of listening and attention. Mm. And that's what I felt like I gave Bonhoeffer for those 3 years.
Mm.
Not to mention the enormous amount of people who I did that with. It's a social sort of endeavor. It's not an individual one. So the people in my room or all of the people who came in with me, not to mention Francis and my secondary supervisor, Mike Higdon, these were people who I sat with and soaked in these texts and thought hard about God and the Bible and did so in order to be as thoughtful and helpful and relevant to the needs of the people, not to mention my children and my wife, in Durham and in church world. Yeah, I mean, this is the fundamental act of being taught how to attend to another human being is the PhD's goal, as far as I'm concerned.
That's a great word. That's a great word. And We're going to want to land the plane here, but Jameson, we're going to have you back on. You're close at hand now that you're on staff at the CPT. Yeah. We're still
you can do this.
Onboarding you into the ministry and the organization, right? This is an ongoing process. And so our listeners will get to know you better in the future. And you're giving great energy and leadership to two of our key initiatives, the Student Theologian Fellowships, where we are trying to gather cohorts of students on seminaries and graduate schools across the country.
We are gathering.
There we go. It's happening. Fair enough. Which is very exciting. And if you're a student listening to this, you're going to no doubt already be acquainted with Jameson, but hear more from him in the future. And then the local theologian fellowships, which is an important part of our ministry, trying to extend the reach and the impact of the Center for Pastor Theologians into communities and gatherings of pastors across the country. So we're very excited about that as well. But grateful for you giving us some of your time today and sharing your theological and pastoral ministry journey. And we will very much look forward to continuing to work together with you and future conversations, even on this podcast.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Thanks, Jameson.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the CPT Podcast, a theology podcast for the church. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider throwing us a like, sharing the podcast online, subscribing, leaving a review. Anything like that would go a long way towards helping other people hear about the podcast. The CPT Podcast is a ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians. You can learn more about the CPT by visiting us at pastortheologians.com. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our host for today's episode was Todd Wilson. Our producer and editor was Trenton Jones. Our music was composed by Andrew Gerlicher. I'm Zach Wagner. Thanks for listening.